This is continuing coverage in the trial of Donna Adelson from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
Everyone can be seated. Please continue with your examination.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Bailey, how did the Adelson-Markell divorce compare across the variety of cases that you've handled?
Simply, it was routine, it was amicable. I've done similar cases that have had anything from 2-day to 7-day trials. I've had them range from $200,000 to $500,000 in fees and costs. I've had multiple financial experts, child development experts, vocational experts, all retained, deposed, testifying. I've had cases with multiple discovery issues, discovery over psychological records, financial records, third-party subpoenas, two full days of deposition of just one party. This was an easy case compared to many.
Did it look worse than it was because of the way in which Mr. Markell's pleadings were drafted?
Yeah, I mean, he drafted pleadings, motions, I think responses would be more appropriate than pleadings, but that's kind of technical. He drafted them like he was drafting a law review article or something. They weren't technically correct. They were verbose. They were hyperbolic. He used a lot of inflammatory language. But when you really looked closely at his requests of the court, there was no there. There was no foundation for his asks.
Nothing further, Your Honor.
Cross-exam.
What is it you were asked to do in this case?
I was asked to review the documents I was given and to opine about whether this was truly a highly contentious custody case, essentially.
And why would your opinion about whether it was a highly contentious custody case matter?
Well, that's for somebody else to decide. I mean, I've done 2,000 cases, or give or take 100 on each side, and I think I have a pretty good judge of where this falls as far as contentiousness.
Sure, but you're somebody that has vast experience with a ton of divorces, right?
Sure.
The parties only have experience with one divorce, right?
I don't know how many they have experience with,
so
but
isn't the contentiousness in the eye of the beholder, in the sense that to you it might not seem like a big deal? But to the parties, it might be the most important thing in the whole wide world. Do you agree with that?
Ms. Kappelman, Ms. Bailey, wait for the question, wait for the answer. Do not speak over each other.
Do you agree that a case, as a lawyer, might be routine, whereas to the parties, it's the most important thing in the world?
To some degree. That's one reason I called Kristen, is Ms. Adamson, in particular, of the lawyers in our community of the family law bar, is extremely measured and calm. And I find that when I litigate against her, we reach resolutions, that people stay measured and calm, and we get things done. She's not one of the other lawyers in town who may stir cases up or play on those emotions. So our job as lawyers is to explain to our clients when we get emotion. If I get something, for example, that, although I've never had, something similar to what Mr. Markell would file, the immediate response is to call your client and go, I know you're going to read this at first glance, so it's going to seem messy. But there's no legal basis for this, so don't worry. And my understanding is that is what she communicated to Wendy.
And when you communicate these things to your clients, hey, this is no big deal, this is no problem, this is a bunch of gibberish, do they always accept that?
Well, that's not the way I would present it, but
do they ever get upset about the gibberish in the pleadings, the offensive materials in the pleadings, regardless of whether or not it's going to impact their chance of success in court, it can be emotionally charged, can it?
Well, I would say annoying more than emotionally charged.
You would not say that divorce and child custody issues are emotionally charged?
They can be, but in this case, they weren't.
They weren't? How do you know?
From the pleadings, because I don't have 10,000 pages in front of me.
You're not in the mind of the people that whose lives are impacted by these pleadings. It's not just about pieces of paper and a binder, is it?
I don't think that's what I said.
People's lives are impacted by the decisions that go on in court, which for you are routine. Would you agree?
In this instance, they reached agreement on all issues, so they had complete control of what was coming out of the court.
Ma'am, could you please answer my question? Are people's lives impacted in drastic ways by routine matters that we see in court as lawyers?
People's lives change after divorce, certainly.
So, like, I may think I've got a bag of stinky garbage, but the garbage man might not think it's stinky at all. Do you get the reference?
I don't.
What is no big deal to us is a big deal to these litigants, right? You can't agree
Perhaps.
With that. You can't agree with it. Strike the question. You were asked, let me ask you this. Let's go on to something else. Have you ever had people get murdered or commit suicide based on the issues that are going on in your family law litigation?
I've never had anyone murdered. I had in one instance a Middle Eastern person committed suicide just because there was a divorce, and that was shameful. So nothing was it was literally the day after the petition was filed, and he had threatened, if you file, I'm going to kill myself, and indeed he did.
And to you, divorce is not shameful, is it?
To me, divorce is not shameful.
Divorce is not a basis to commit suicide, is it?
Not according to me, but I didn't grow up in Iran or wherever this custom or feeling.
Exactly, Ms. Bailey.
Derived.
To that person, it was a reason to commit suicide, right?
Apparently so.
Aren't these issues raised in these pleadings potential fuel to make people upset?
Potential fuel to possibly make people upset?
Yes, ma'am. For example, you were asked about what we've called the grandmama issue. You say, oh, it's no big deal. It wouldn't be granted. It was buried in there. But the allegation is, grandma is disparaging me to these kids, and I won't tolerate it, right? Couldn't that be upsetting to grandma?
You'd have to ask grandma. I don't.
Exactly.
It shouldn't have been. There was no proof.
It shouldn't have been, in your opinion.
In my opinion.
But in your opinion, divorce is no reason to commit suicide, right?
True.
Gibbers, according to the evidence in this case, means Jew in boots. It's not a flattering term by that definition or by your definition of someone that speaks gibberish. Can we agree it's not a flattering term?
No, it's probably not flattering, but I've seen far, far worse.
You've seen worse.
I have.
If Mr. Markell wasn't paying by the deadline, isn't that something that would be potentially upsetting to the parties or their family members?
I don't know how upsetting $80,000 would be. I don't know.
$80,000 is a lot of money, isn't it, Ms. Bailey?
It depends on who you are.
Exactly. So we'd have to ask the parties, right? Right?
Sure.
Okay.
I think on that issue, he clearly had the assets. So at the end of the day, he was going to pay. It was just a matter of jumping through hoops to get the money.
He was either going to pay, or he was going to get sanctioned by the court, or he was going to end up in jail, right?
I don't see any possibility he was going to end up in jail.
Okay, well, you sat in the courtroom during Ms. Adamson's testimony, didn't you? And Ms. Adamson said that that was one alternative, an extreme alternative, obviously. But that's what contempt means, right, ultimately.
Wouldn't even come into play until the motion for enforcement, and then he didn't abide by that, and then the judge asked him to do something else, and then he didn't abide by that. I think jail was pretty far-fetched.
Well, as long as he pays. Ultimately, the teeth is, you go to jail.
No, that's not true.
It's not true. Okay. Ms. Adamson was incorrect on that point, I guess.
Objection, Your Honor. It's not the question of a strike.
I'll rephrase it.
What is the objection again?
It's an improper comment on the witness's testimony.
Sustain. Please rephrase your question.
I said Ms. Adamson was incorrect on that point when she said jail was a potential option. Is that correct?
Well, I could break it down. There's two different matters in that financial motion on October 31st. Mm-hmm. One was the $70,000 still due to Wendy. Jail is not a possibility on that. But you don't send people to jail for failure to pay money. We don't do that. The $10,000 in fees to Kristen was more debatable because that could have been in the specter of support. And if you don't pay alimony or child support after repeated chances, I guess you could say, jail might be an option, but there's always a purge to that. So I've seen many times in child support, if you don't pay child support, then the judge says, bailiff, get, you know, Mr. So-and-so or whatever. And then all of a sudden he comes up with money out of his pocket and he pays and he never goes to jail. So you always have the key to the jail when you owe a support obligation. So technically, if he wanted to go to jail rather than pay Kristen the $10,000, eventually there may have been a hearing where that happened. I've seen one person in my career go to jail over child support.
Right, because they pay because they don't want to go to jail. If there was no jail and no consequences, they would never pay, right?
Some people wouldn't. Right. And that's just support. There's no jail consequence to the $70,000 due Wendy. It was only the $10,000 due Kristen that could have possibly remotely been a possibility.
Did you see evidence in this case of Wendy taking her mother's suggestions, cutting and pasting them into an email as her own, and then forwarding those questions to Ms. Adamson?
No, I didn't see any.
And did you see, in your review of the evidence in this case, Ms. Adamson responding to those questions and Wendy then forwarding those answers to her mother?
I don't recall that. I don't recall seeing that.
Did you review the communications from Donna Adelson, both in the form of email and text messages, that suggest that she was, in fact, extremely disappointed and upset about the outcome of the relocation motion?
I did. In probably the 5 days after the relocation, which was, say, 4 weeks before the ultimate settlement in July, there were a flurry of emails where she was obviously upset.
Did you review Mrs. Adelson's communications after July 31st that suggests she's consistently still upset about this?
I wasn't provided.
So you were... I'm sorry, finish your answer. You weren't provided any...
I wasn't provided after the flurry, right after the relocation, before the final judgment was entered in July of 2013. After July 2013, I don't recall seeing any emails from Ms. Donna Adelson about relocation.
Did you see any emails from her at all post-settlement?
Not until maybe December. It was a while, October maybe.
Okay.
Several months.
If Dan Markell had agreed to the relocation post-denial, post-stipulation, post. It could still happen, right? I mean, if he agrees, it could happen.
Sure, if he agreed, she could have relocated.
All right, and if he was murdered, it could happen, right?
Well, obviously.
So you categorized Dan Markell's pleadings in a lot of different ways: baseless, untrue, unenforceable, gibberish, nonsense, suggestion of unethical filings on the part of his lawyer to sign off on them. Are you saying, I think what you're saying is that those things wouldn't amount to much in court because it's not really effective filings. Is that what you're saying?
What I'm saying is his motions post July 31st were not based in the law. And I don't think that allegations about accounts he knew of not being on an early filed financial affidavit would amount to fraud, and it certainly wouldn't excuse him not paying what he was supposed to pay under the terms of the court order. And the motion in March 26th related to parenting, he was trying to enforce things that weren't in the marital settlement agreement. There was no court order to make her do the things he wanted her to do. So there's no basis for the court to have granted his motion.
Right, so they weren't going to be successful. It's your opinion they weren't going to be successful.
Yes, that's my opinion.
But would you agree that the things he was putting in there are inflammatory?
I would agree that they were inflammatory.
And they potentially could make the parties or their relatives upset to read those pleadings and those inflammatory accusations.
Sure, nobody wants to read those allegations, true or not, about themselves in a public record.
You were shown a bunch of binders on a case. That case has nothing to do with this case, right?
No, it was a relocation case.
All right. And that case, was anybody murdered in that case?
No.
Okay. So if somebody had been murdered in that case, there might have been a lot less paper, right? Case would have been shorter if somebody had gotten murdered, wouldn't it, Miss Bailey?
If there wasn't a party, the case would have ended.
And if our case, we hadn't had a murder, we might have a lot more paper in our case, wouldn't we?
No, because the divorce was over in July.
Divorce was over in July, but they kept filing papers, didn't they?
Well, and the case was set for hearing May 15th, 2014. So the motion that Ms. Adamson filed in October, and the motion that Mr. Markell filed in February, and then the motion he filed in March, were all set for hearing May 15th. And then Mr. Markell amped it up again, and on May 5th, he filed the motion that accused Kristen of fraud. So she had to withdraw, so they had to move that motion. So had that not been filed, they would have had a resolution on May 15th.
We don't know that. How do you know it was going to go on May 15th? Could have gotten continued for any zillion different reasons, couldn't it?
It was set for May 15th, and it was noticed for May 15th.
Set for May 15th, but at the time of Dan Markell's murder, litigation was still ongoing in this case.
Yes.
And even after that was resolved, there would be nothing stopping them from having a bunch of other time-sharing issues or whatever come up, and they might have ended up with reams of paper, right?
Calls for speculation.
Overruled. The witness has provided an opinion. The state will cross-examine.
I guess my response to that would be, I think it would have been to Wendy's benefit to proceed with those hearings, because nothing makes someone stop filing nonsense pleadings and motions better than having them ordered to pay the other side's attorney's fees. So had they gone to the hearing on May 15th, and had Wendy have been successful, he would have very likely had to pay Wendy's attorney's fees. And I really encourage my clients in these situations to take it to hearing. So once the other side gets kind of slapped down, if you will, by the court and made to pay your fees, then they tend to back off.
But that hadn't happened yet.
It had not happened yet.
And we'll never know when that was going to happen, because we never got to that point, right?
Clearly.
Because he was murdered.
Clearly.
May I have a moment to confer, Judge?
Go ahead.
More continuing coverage in the trial of Donna Adelson is coming up from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a moment.